I looked only at ordinary things. The tiles of the floor, the door, the handle, not locked. Quietly, quietly. I stepped in something. Oh, the guard's blood. Keep going. The stairs. The future I walked toward loomed ever larger, clearer, and brighter. With every step I took, my certainty grew. But I pushed that certainty down, folded my path small and private. Instead, I recalled the fragrance of my mother's candle. I thought of my father writing in his study every night, and almost every night burning what he had written. Softly, I paced down the steps. One set of steps, and then on to the wider stairway, down to the level of the scrolls and libraries. I edged my way along the wall and peered around the corner. The wide hallways were lit by fat burning pots of oil. No, not that memory. I thought instead of the forest fragrance of the oil, how sweetly it smelled as it burned. No one moved in the corridors. I moved softly along the paneled walls. I did not look up at the framed portraits and landscapes. I reached the door of the first scroll room. I entered cautiously, lest any Lurics or Lingstras or Collators still be at work. But all was silent and dark. The lamps in here had been extinguished for the night. I waited for my eyes to adjust. The high windows along the back wall let in starlight and moonlight. It would have to be enough to guide me. I had a careful sequence of tasks to follow. I walked among the shelves and racks, weaving in and out of them, my arms outstretched. I tumbled scrolls and papers and books to the floor. I carpeted the floor with them, weaving among the garden of stored dreams as if I were a bee moving in a meadow of nectar-laden flowers. Old cracked scrolls and fresh sheets of paper, calf-skin vellum and leather-bound books. To the floor with them, until I had created a path of fallen dreams through the maze of racks and shelves. I had to stand on a chair to reach the fat pot of oil on the shelf. The lamp was very heavy, and I spilled some of it as I got it down. Fragrance of forest. I thought of rich earth and called to mind memories of my mother. If you weed, you must do it well. Take it all out, down to the deepest root. Otherwise, it will just come back. It will be stronger than ever, and you will have that work to do over again. Or someone else must take on your unfinished task. The pot was heavy. I set it on the floor, tipped it like a teapot, and poured the oil in a long, meandering thread as I dragged it up and down the rows of shelves of books and scrolls and vellums. I watered my trail of fallen dreams. When the oil was gone, I walked it again, pulling more scrolls and papers from the shelves and letting them fall and soak in the oil. I saw another shelf with an oil lamp. Again I used a chair, and again I poured the oil and then tumbled more predictions into it. The shelves were fine wooden ones, and I was pleased to see the oils seep under them. A third pot of oil soaked all these possible futures, and I judged my task in this chamber was done. I thought of my mother's garden as I half-carried and half-dragged a chair into the main hall. Oh, honeysuckle, how well I recalled your fragrance. I took a battered half of my mother's candle. I remembered it as pristine, the rich, sleek amber of beeswax. It was chipped and dented now, the wax embedded with dirt and clothing fibers, but it would burn. The lamp shelves in the hallway were higher. I could barely reach the flame with my candle. I lit it and cupped my hand to protect the flame as I carried it back to the scroll room. I felt I said farewell to a friend as I let wax from it drip onto the floor. I secured it so that it would burn as it lay there and not roll away. When a thumb's width of candle had burned, the flame would reach the oil. I would have to hurry.
What are you doing?
Vindelire was confused, clumsy to let his wandering brush my thoughts. I reached out to him as if I didn't fear him. I let my thoughts soften at the edges as if I was sleepy.
My mother's garden, honeysuckle, so fragrant in the hot summer sun. The pine forest nearby, breathing sweetly.
I sighed out a long, slow breath and imagined rolling over on the thin straw mattress in my cell. I let my thoughts overflow with sleepiness as I slipped my awareness into his senses. He was no longer in a cell, but a comfortable room. Felody's room. His tongue had tasted fine brandy, but did not enjoy it. His injuries had been salved and bandaged. His mouth held the remembrance of sweet, rich foods. His belly was tight with them. But there was something more to come. He simmered with anticipation. Fear seeped into my belly like cold water. I knew that eagerness. I knew what he awaited. But I had believed it was all gone. I'd been careless.
It isn't. Capra had concealed 4 vials of it, but she can no longer hold it back from us. And when I have it, I will blast your little mind with my magic. You will do whatever you are told to do. I will be so strong that no one can disobey me. I will tell you to die, as you told Dwalia. No. No, I won't. I know something better I can do. The traitor's death for you. The worms will eat you until your eyes bleed and you plead with me to kill you.
He trumpeted it out, not caring if he woke me. I slammed my walls shut, and his bragging and threats clawed and racketed against them. Oh, how he hated me now. How he hated everyone. Everyone had hurt him. Everyone had betrayed him. But he would have his revenge soon. Soon. Honeysuckle and bees. Bees humming so loud in the fairy rosebush that I could hear nothing else. Only bees. In a deep corner of myself, I was glad I was no longer locked in that cell. I had made the right choice.
Coltrey! Coltrey! Heed me! The little bitch is out of her cell. Search the gardens and cottages for her. She thinks she is clever, but she smells flowers, and I know it. Quickly, prepare the traitor's death for her. Hunt her down and deliver it to her.
Vindalaya, I am with the healer and Capra in her tower. She has given me the serpent potion. I will bring it to you.
Yes. Excellent, good. But send out the guards to search for her. Tell them she has escaped and I know it. Begin with the gardens, but find her, find Bee. She is more dangerous than you can imagine.
I stood still. I built my walls and made them stouter and stronger. If Vindalaya received the potion, could I withstand him? I did not know. My time was going swiftly. There was still so much I had to do. I ran light-footed down the hall to the next door that I knew contained a scroll library. I entered the second chamber as cautiously as the first, but it was also deserted and dark. I repeated my serpentine trail of fallen scrolls. I was better at it this time, not struggling to push heavy books to the floor. Let them burn when the reaching flames climbed to them. I made a heap of scrolls and papers under a heavy wooden table that rested on a thick rug. Again, I moved a chair to reach a slumbering lamp. I let the fragrance of the oil fill my mind as I left a trickling trail in and out and around each towering shelf of scrolls. This was the larger room. I should have come here first. The second lamp was heavy. I watered the tables and chairs as best I could, trying not to spill oil on my clothing. But the pot was heavy, and sometimes oil spattered on my feet. Vindalaya was aware of me now. I thought of my flat little mattress in my cell. I thought of the straw that filled it and how it crushed under me. It smelled of straw and dust. I filled my mind with the scent of straw and dust. How the broken straws and the coarse fabric poked me. I leaked a tiny bit of that to him. That thought pleased him, and I let him savor it. In a distant shout to Coltrey, he demanded more guards be sent to the rooftop cells. I slipped away from his thoughts. The third heavy pot was hard to manage. I staggered as I took it down, and it leapt in my arms. Oil soaked the front of my clothing and made my hands slippery. It was hard to grip it, and hard to think of honeysuckle or pine logs on a fire as I dragged it through the scroll room. As before, I retraced my steps, tumbling and jumbling scrolls and books and papers from the shelves. They were eager to soak up the oil. I saw ink darken and then spread as the oil took it. Vindelire cackled wildly outside my walls. I did not like the note of triumph in his howling, but I dared not give him a thought. A way out is a way in. I would not let my mind focus on his clamor. I thought only of honeysuckle and pulling weeds out to the last bit of root. How one had to destroy it all, or it would all spring up again. I was weeding in my mother's garden. I gathered the leaves into my hands, pulled slowly and steadily to draw the long yellow root from the ground. My hand slipped on the door latch, and it was hard to keep a tight grip on the heavy wooden chair I dragged into the hall. The dragging legs made a sound. I could not help that. I clambered up. This half of the candle was shorter. I had to stand on tiptoe for its tattered wick to reach the flame. I stood, my hand stretched high over my head, waiting, waiting, until finally the flame moved from the lamp to my candle.
They will find you. They are coming for you now. You will die the traitor's death. I have burned it into their minds as I burned Coltry. They will not stop until they find you.
You are too late. I should not have let that thought escape me, but oh, the sweet satisfaction. I showed him the flame, let him smell the fragrance of the honeysuckle that my mother and I had gathered and stored in it. Then I pushed him as hard as I could with the terrible smell of synth burning. I slipped as I got off the chair. My candle fell and rolled. I pounced on it, and the flame leapt as it licked my oily hand. It did not quite catch. There was oil on my bare feet, and I struggled to get the purchase to open the door to the second scroll room. I did not leave my candle this time. I walked deep into the room and crouched to set fire to the mounded paper under the tables. I moved past four tiers of shelves, crouched again, and set a tumble of papers ablaze. I lit a third one, and was startled when it caught well, and the flames darted away from me, following the trail of tumbled scrolls. I ran back to the door, racing the devouring fire. At the door I turned. "Goodbye, Mother," I said softly, and set her last candle down on an oily scroll. The flames leapt high, licking the wooden shelves and racks, racing down the narrow walkways between the shelves. They were high enough and hot enough that scrolls on the second, third, even fourth shelves began to brown and crisp and then ignite. I looked up to see coiling clouds of smoke crawling along the ceiling like drowned serpents tugged by a tide. I stood for a time, my back to the door, watching, smelling the smoke and fumes, feeling the heat waft toward me. Burning bits of paper were carried on the waves of heat from the fires. They lifted high to settle on the topmost shelves like homing pigeons, bringing glowing embers to the papers stored there. I had to push hard to get the door open. As it did, the air moved and the flames suddenly roared. I leapt out of the room, fearful that the oil on my hands and clothes might catch. The candle in the first scroll room had done its task. The doors to that chamber shuddered, as if the flames were pounding to get out. Thin tendrils of smoke were wafting out with every thud of the doors against their frames. It reminded me of a dog's breath, streaming fog on a cold winter day. I stood still, feeling as if I balanced in that instant. This was my perfect moment. I was where I was born to be, and the task I had been born to do was now being performed. Once I moved, the futures would again swirl and change, but in this perfect moment, I fulfilled my fate. Perhaps I would live. I wanted to live, but only if that path led toward my escaping the servants. If living meant I was recaptured, if they gave me the traitor's death, if I lived to see Vindelire's face. No. I knew what they meant by traitor's death. I had seen the poor messenger, tears of blood flowing from her eyes, eaten from within by parasites. If I had to choose between death and capture, I would choose death. My heart beat faster at that thought, and with every beat I was aware that I was making a decision. Move. Don't move. run back into the scroll room, and the flames would seize me. It would still be a faster death than what the servants would give me. Weep. Don't weep. Run left, run right. Flee back to my cell and lock myself in. Hide in the gardens. All choices I could make, and from each of those choices, an infinite number of futures sprang. My fire was hot. I could smell the wooden doors charring, and even see the darkening of the wood. The corridor was warmer than it had been. How much damage could I do? The chairs I had pushed out into the corridor still waited under the lamp shelves where I had kindled my candles. My two candles that had come so far from my mother's hand to help me pull this evil from the world, right down to its roots, were used now. But I could do more, I thought. No time to pause or to wonder. I climbed up on the nearest chair. The base of the pot lamp was fat and heavy, and just slightly warm to the touch. I already had oil on my shirt and trousers. One touch of the flame and I could dance and scream just as Simph had done.
Do it, but do it carefully. Then flee.
Wolffather's suggestion was a whisper. It made me realize I'd been careless with my walls. I could taste the foul serpent potion in Vindelire's mouth.
Do not think of him. Walls.
I could only reach the pot with one hand, and only if I stood on my toes. I pushed at it. Nothing.
Push again.
I heard the baked clay base of the pot grind against its wooden shelf. I pushed again. It didn't move. I felt a wave of dizziness and lifted my eyes from my task to look down the hall. It was hazy. I more fell than jumped from my chair. My fires were humming behind the doors now. The doors thudded rhythmically in their frames. The wood was blackening. Soon the flames would break through. I wondered if I could pick up the chair and throw it at the pot, to break it or knock it down. Then a little tongue of flame licked from the top of the first door, making a stripe of brown on the wood panelling above. I moved away from my fires. I came to another door and opened it. I stared in awe and disappointment. More scrolls. More books and papers. More harvested dreams for them to exploit. I would not let it happen.
There is no time.
This is why I am here. This is the future I was meant to create. This is my time, and all the time I need. The path I make begins here. I have to do this. I spoke the words aloud. I was more careless now. I pushed and pulled books and scrolls. I found a lamp inside the library. Someone had left it on a table. This one was only half full. I dumped it in a trail. I found another lamp on a shelf and pushed it down with a great crash. Oil spattered a tapestry and the side of a tall shelf of papers. Good. All good. Now I just needed a flame. I spindled papers and carried them out into the hall with me. Smoke and haze. I coughed. I suddenly felt dizzy.
Flee! Now! You must get outside.
Wolffather broke through my walls, and his urgency could not be denied. I heard a crash, and then the fire roared ever louder. Of course, there were other pot lamps in the scroll rooms. They would catch and feed the flames. I dropped my spindled papers. Abruptly, I wanted to live. I wanted one more chance to escape and to be alive. I scuttled down the hallway to the stairs. I looked back. Thick smoke was crawling and boiling along the painted ceiling. The panelling above the first door was on fire now. Suddenly, the doors of the second chamber popped open. Flames leapt out. The pot lamp beside the scroll room door hopped and fell. Oil coursed down the wall and across the floor. Flames licked out of the cracked door and then danced across the flowing oil. Fire caressed and stroked the panelled walls. The conflagration gave a mighty cough. Then the wall of heat struck me. I flew forward with the impact, landing on the hard floor, elbows and knees and chin. I bit my tongue. I gasped with the sharp pain, choked, and blinked my watering eyes. I gathered myself and stood up. Almost immediately, I dropped down again. Above me was a hovering blanket of heat and smoke. I lay on the floor, trying to pant.
Crawl. Get to the stairs. You must get outside.
I obeyed him.
Chapter 34 Smoke.
But you know, Fitz, after my brother died, I was more alone than I had thought I could ever be. Shrewd was my king, yes, and the man who commanded my hand, but in the hours after the castle was asleep, when he and I sat at the hearth in his bedroom and talked, he was also my friend. I've had few friends in my lifetime. When I lived behind the walls, there were a few key spies I met with, often in one of my guises. Perhaps I came to depend on your companionship too much, because of that isolation. Was I jealous of your friendships and romances? No. I think the better word would be envy. Even after I emerged from the walls and could move through Buckkeeper's Lord's shade, it was difficult to form deep friendships, for always my history and trade had to remain a secret. Look at your own friends through those days. How many of them truly knew what you were, what you had done, and what you were capable of doing?
Missive from Shade to Fitzchivalry Farseer.
Fool,
I said. The word barely reached past my lips as I stared into the darkened cell. I saw his pale face, eyes closed, the whiteness of his outstretched hand, and knew with swift certainty that he had taken my merciful exit. Blackness threatened the edges of my vision. I could neither look away nor speak. I'd given him his death. He'd taken it. We were here. We could have saved him. Why had I done it? I heard small sounds of metal on metal.
Bring a light,
Spark muttered. I turned my head. She was beside me, picks already in a very old lock. Then Lant came, carrying a fat lamp in both hands. He thudded it down beside her. It did little to light her task, but she labored on. I studied the fool in the flickering light, blood on his face. He died alone in a cell. Better, perhaps, than the sustained torture he had feared. But I could not feel any relief.
Leave it. It's too late. We need to seek for B,
I whispered to Spark. B, I told myself. Think only of B. But Spark gave a sudden grunt as she moved two picks against each other and the lock gave way. And I could not help but push the door open and enter the cell to stand over him. Did I have to leave his body here? Could I do otherwise? The others clustered at the door, watching me as I stooped, reaching to wipe the blood from his face. The swung chamber pot missed my head, but not by much. I felt the noisome wind of its passage and heard the clatter as it hit the cell wall. I jumped back as the fool came up at me, clawed hands seeking my eyes. I caught him and hugged him tight to me, saying, Fool, fool, it's me, it's Fitz, stop, it's me. An instant longer his body was tense against mine, and then he all but collapsed.
Capra!
His swollen mouth softened his words.
I was expecting Coltrey with the hot tongs while she watched.
No, we're all here to find you and to find B and bring her home. Fool, why did you go off without us? The question that had been fire in my gut all day.
Get to B. Rooftop cells. She's up there. So is Prilcop.
Motley told us. We'll find her. He pushed his feet against the door. I let him take some of his weight, but didn't drop him. The phrases came from him in gasps as I walked him to the cell door.
To save B. My fault they took her. I led them to her, and to kill them. To do my own dirty work. To fix the mess I'd made. To be the catalyst this time, as you said I might.
Let me help, Lant said, taking his arm, and Spark leaned in to look at his face, asking, How badly is he hurt? I don't know. Fool, I'd feared you'd eaten the poison I gave you. You didn't, did you? A horrible thing to wonder if he had swallowed it just before we arrived.
I couldn't. I wanted to, but I couldn't. Not while they have be. I can't die until I've made it right, Fitz.
Fresh blood was flowing from his nose. He snuffled, and then said proudly,
I did for two of them, I think. I got to fellow these chambers. I had to hide on his stairs, and thought that I might as well climb the rest of the way and leave him some small mementos. He wasn't there. I think I did it right. On the lip of his cup, in his wine, to be sure, and a powder rubbed into his pillow and linens. More on the latch of his door.
His voice was uneven as we walked him out of the cell. That should do it, I muttered. It sounded as if he had deposited enough poison to kill a dozen people. Thorough, I added. And then, how did you kill Simph?
Not Simph. Capra. She was groaning when they dragged her back. I think I killed her. I put a knife in her belly twice.
He swayed, leaned on me, then determinedly straightened.
I lost that knife and the butterfly cloak.
Acceptable cost, I said. I found a hogshead of water. I don't know how clean it is, Purr announced worriedly.
Water, clean or dirty, give me some.
We walked him over to it. There was a dipper hooked on the edge of the barrel. Purr filled it for him, and he drank. The next one he poured over his head and rubbed over his face. With his hair slicked to his skull, in the dimness, he looked very old.
More,
he said, and we waited for him without speaking. When he paused, Spark asked,
Besides the bruises we can see and the split brow, are you hurt?
He grimaced, showing bloody teeth, and then spat.
They hit me with sticks, a lot, some kicking too. Brutal, but not precise. They were reserving that for Capra's pleasure, I think. But I hope she's dead. Fitz, my hurts don't matter. We have to get to B. The last time I saw her, she was held in the upper cells, on the roof of the stronghouse. And Prilcop is here somewhere. I thought they would put him here with me, but they didn't.
He stopped to breathe, holding his ribs. He coughed, and I winced with him. I told you, Motley found her for us. I wondered how many blows to the head he had taken. He was silent. Then he said,
Of course. She should have been our first spy.
Her thought of it, I said, and the boy grinned briefly when I glanced at him. He had dragged the guard's body away from the table and now set the chair out for the fool. I nodded at him, acknowledging his work. We seated the fool and Purr went back to the water to wash his hands and then drink. I set my attention back on the fool. We're going after her now, fool. We can't smuggle her out over the causeway. With Simph dead, the servants have shut it down. We are trapped here unless you can find the entrance to the tunnel under the causeway. He squinted at me, trying to master his thoughts.
How did you get here, then?
We came in through the waste chute that dumps into the bay, but we can't go back that way. The incoming tide will flood it, unless we can find B and conceal ourselves until the next low tide.
Half a day from now?
He shook his head.
They'll come back for me long before that. They'll find us here.
What was your escape plan?
Butterfly cloak and the causeway.
One is gone, and the other closed. We are back to trying to find the entrance to the tunnel. He gasped a laugh.
I liked mine better. How do you know Simph is dead?
They announced it and hung a black banner from her tower. He shook his head and it turned to a wobble.
Not my doing.
Spark broke in.
Dorn comes. We need to go get B, now, before the castle wakes. And Prilcop, too, please.
The fool tried to sit up straighter, failed. If we can. I would make no promises. Once I had B, all my efforts would go toward keeping her safe and getting her out of here. Fool, How much can you see?
In this light, not much.
I killed the guard here. Do you know if or when others will be sent down?
I don't know. She was the only one I saw. Fitz, in hundreds of years, no one has moved against the servants. With Simph dead, my attack on Capra will have alarmed them. Expect to encounter a lot of guards.
I nodded. I'm going up after B.
They may have moved her. I know they were going to move Prilkop after they saw me there.
Well, that's where I'll start. I want the rest of you to stay here. Try to find the entry to the old tunnel, the one they took the fool out of when he escaped the first time. Now I must go.
Not alone,
Lant objected. Purr said nothing. He simply stood and came to my side.
Let me think,
the fool replied breathlessly.
We should go up one level. There are more cells there, a dozen of them, and some will almost certainly be occupied. It is their main place for torment and imprisonment. They held Prilkop and me there for a very long time. Perhaps he is there.
Unwillingly, he added,
and perhaps B is too.
I was not sure if I hoped to find Prilkop or not. If he had been as badly treated as the fool, would we be able to get him out of Clara's? A useless question. We would be unable to leave him. The stairs past the water barrel. Are those the ones we want?
Yes. The door will be locked.
Not for me,
Spark bragged. Fleet as a rabbit, she sprinted ahead of us and up the steps. I saw her bend to examine the lock, and then she rummaged in her small pack to find her picks. While she worked on the latch, I had a more thorough prowl of that level and quickly came back to my companions. If there is a door that leads to a passage under the causeway, I don't see it.
The door to a secret tunnel would be well concealed,
the fool reminded me. Unwillingly, he added,
and it may not be on this level. I was moving in and out of awareness when they freed me. Fitz, I know you think I will slow you. I know you fear for Spark and Purr, but behind that door there will be more guards, possibly more than you can handle alone.
It would be excellent if we could find that tunnel. I let his other words go by me. Purr looked thoughtful.
It would most likely be on the wall that faces the causeway.
Go look again. I may have missed something. I went to help Spark with the lock. But as I stood behind her, she gave me an annoyed glance.
I can do this,
she breathed, and I let her. I knew a moment of terrible guilt. Lant had followed me up the steps. My eyes met his over the girl's bent head as she worked with her picks. I would not waste words telling him to protect her, to protect them all at any cost. He knew. I could see in his eyes that he was as troubled as I about what we might face. The fool had stirred the hornet's nest, but Simph's death was not his doing. Accident? Disease? Or murder?
We've got it,
she whispered at almost the same moment that Purr came up the steps to gesture that his search had been fruitless. The snick of the lock surrendering seemed very loud. I held my breath and listened. Nothing from beyond the door. Time to go. I glanced at Lant. He shook his head, his lips folded tight. He would not be left behind. Purr refused to look at me, but his knife was drawn. I touched Spark's wrist and wagged a finger toward the fool. Protect him, I mouthed, and was relieved when she ghosted down the stone steps to stand beside him. He looked up at us, his pale features indistinct in the dimness. I eased the door open and motioned the others to wait as I ventured out alone. Several pot lamps burned, giving light to the central area of a chamber much larger than the one below. The fool's horrific tales were made real. There were the tables with their dangling manacles and blade-scarred surfaces. Elevated benches surrounded them on three sides. Comfortable seating for the voyeurs of the torturer's work. A pit for a fire. Beside it, a meticulously tidy rack. pokers and pincers, knives and saws and other tools I had no names for. I had never understood the hearts of such people. Who could find amusement and arousal in the pain of another? Evidently here it was popular enough to draw an audience. It was a large room. Along one wall there were barred cell fronts. Along another more steps ascended. I had a terrifying hope. If B was here, we could break her free and get her out before the tide's turn filled the waste chute with water. It would be difficult to wade out against the incoming tide, but not impossible. I moved swiftly and silently. There were no guards, and while my wit warned me of flickering life in the cells, I sensed no one else within the chamber. I wished for the wolf's ears and nose. I could not stand the suspense. I moved closer to the unlit cells. The dim light from the central area showed me a total of 5 prisoners, all adults. They slept or huddled on straw. I ventured closer to a cell and saw Prilkop, asleep or unconscious. I went back to the door. The Fool and Spark had come up the steps. They all huddled on the landing. I breathed my words. There's no sign of B. Prilkop is in one of the cells. It seems clear. But be quiet. We need to. There was the unmistakable sound of a lock turning and a door opening. I pushed back in among my followers and drew the door almost closed behind me.
What?
The Fool began, and I quickly placed 2 fingers on his lips. We all froze. I could hear, but not see, the scuff of booted feet, more than 3 people, the muttered complaints and curses of guardsmen roused to unwelcome duty. I heard a clatter, a curse, and...
I hate this place. It stinks. Why would anyone come down here to hide? There's no one here. The door was locked. I told you no one got past us. Now can we go back to our station? I was eating.
No.
The leader's reply was terse.
You're joining us. We're to search every chamber on this level for the escaped prisoner. Rutor and his troops are searching the cottages and gardens. Kilps have taken the grounds between the stronghouse and the castle walls, and Coltrey's rousing out his special lads.
Whole damn place is on edge since Simph was killed. Wish they'd done a better job on Vindalire.
The guardswoman brayed out a laugh.
Ferb and I had the honour to toss Dwalia into the cesspit. Ferb took a piss on her. Nasty old bitch looked better dead.
The leader was not amused. Let's go. Every room on this level is to be checked and every door locked behind us. If no luck, we move up to the next level. No one gets past us.
I bet it was one of the whites did Dwalia. Those little snakes had no reason to like her. And Simph? I think she was an accident. I heard they did some work on Vindalire to try to get the truth out of him. He was chained there. He had to have seen what happened. They should just make him talk. I wouldn't mind watching that.
Let's go. Their leader was plainly annoyed with the chatter and dawdling. The footsteps moved off. I waited until I heard a door close. The Fool spoke 3 words into the silence.
Dwalia is dead.
I could not read his sentiment. Was he glad or less fearful or regretful that he had not had the chance to be present at her death? Maybe all those things or none of them. Prilkop is in a cell in there and 3 others.
He may know what they did with B. He was caged beside her.
Those were, perhaps, the only words that could have made me delay for him. Lant, take Purr, guard the next door. I know they locked it. It doesn't mean they won't be back. Spark, Fool, with me. I eased the door open, and like shadows, we moved to our targets. I gestured to Prilkop's cell, and Spark and the Fool hurried to it while I seized one of the pot lamps and brought it over. I did not want the other prisoners to wake, nor did I wish to free them. They were factors beyond my control, and I already had too many of those. As Spark went to work on the lock on his cell, the Fool softly called,
Prilkop, wake up!
The big man had been curled in a ball, his arms and hands coiled protectively over his head. At the Fool's second call, He dropped his hands and lifted his head. One eye was swollen shut, and his lower lip was as fat as a sausage. He stared. Painfully, he uncurled and set his feet to the cell floor. As he shuffled toward us, I heard chains clank. "Where is B?" I demanded of him. His good eye found me and wandered over my face. He gave a small nod to himself.
"The unexpected son. But I expected you."
He coughed out a small laugh.
"The upper cells were where I saw her last. Is this another rescue?"
"It is," I turned. Behind me I heard him say, "I hope this one is better than the last." As I moved away, he called, more loudly than I liked,
"There are others up there in those rooftop cells. Free them."
"Fitz!"
Spark whisper shouted after me. "Free him, then search for the hidden tunnel. I'll be back with B." I didn't wait for their objections. I crossed the room at a run. "Give me some space," I whispered to Lant and Purr as I drew out my own lockpicks. It was dark, but shade had made me practice endlessly by touch. I wordlessly thanked the old man as I probed, pushed, and levered until I heard the satisfaction of a latch giving way. "Stay back," I warned the others. Again, I eased a door open and peered out. It was the guard's chamber. A table, four chairs, dice abandoned beside a half-eaten peach and three cups. I slipped into the room. There was fading warmth on the chair, and the fruit looked freshly bitten. I went back to the others. "Come, but quietly. The guards from this chamber were called away. I fear the whole castle is alerted. They're searching for an escaped prisoner." Another door, another lock, but I picked it quickly. Again, I cautioned them to wait and eased a tall, heavy door open. I peered in both directions, down a long, curving corridor with many doors. There was no one in sight. On shelves at intervals, fat lamps burned some fragrant oil. All was calm. It was jolting to step from a place of bars and torture and bored guards into a gently lit corridor, panelled in a white wood I'd never seen before. The floor meticulously clean, with framed portraits on the wall. It was like stepping from a nightmare into a dream. I weighed my plans. I was not cheered to know that all doors on this level would be locked after the guards had searched each room. If we had to retreat to hiding, there would be nowhere to go. One by one, we slipped out. I led the way. Purr was behind me, with his short sword out. Lant came last, sword in hand. I carried my knife in my left and the ship's hatchet in my right, my pathetic invasion force challenging a fortified stronghold. But there was no other choice. The corridor curved gently away from me in both directions. At wide intervals, there were tall double doors covered with decorative carving. All was quiet. I recalled what the fool had told me as we created our map. The ground floor would be audience chambers and waiting rooms and private greeting rooms for very important guests. There were several stairs to the next level. I chose to go to the right. I tested the first two doors we passed. Locked. I hoped that meant we were following the patrol. But if they turned back this way, we had nowhere to hide.
"What's that sound?" Purr demanded.
"I don't know." It was a muttering. An uneven roar. Lant was looking up, Purr behind us. I had no time to worry about it. "We have to find B." I led them on. We were like rats as we ran, hugging the walls. Rounding the curve in the corridor, I saw the staircase. A pale grey fog was drifting down it. I slowed, stared, and then smelled it clearly. Smoke. Now I understood. Above us was the roaring laughter of the fire on the upper stories. I heard distant shouts and cries of fear.
"She's up there,"
I said, and ran. I took the stairs two at a time. On the first landing, Purr passed me. I lost sight of him in the turning of the stairs. I sheathed my knife, hooked my hatchet in my belt, and followed. I heard the slapping of footsteps, coughing, and a woman wailing. Four people passed me, racing down the stairs.
"Fire!"
one shouted at me as he passed. Behind me, I heard Lant shout and assumed they'd collided with him. What had been a haze became grey, stinking smoke. A dozen more steps, and the smoke was strangling me. My eyes streamed. I stumbled, went down to my knees on the steps, and found slightly cooler and cleaner air. I pressed my sleeve to my nose and mouth and crawled three steps higher. It was only smoke. How could it stop me? I reached the top of the stairs. There was a landing. Past it, more steps. I couldn't see Purr. B had been on the rooftop. I continued my upward crawl. Where was Purr? I halted, chest pressed to the last step before the landing. To my left was a corridor thick with smoke, cloaking the dark orange glow of a fire. I put my arm across my mouth and breathed through my shirt. Squinting, I made out flames licking a panelled wall. I heard a pop, followed by the sound of falling crockery. Fire skated toward me, gliding on oil as if it were ice. I recoiled and felt a body under my hand. "Purr?" I gasped. I heard shouts above me, panicked cries for help. Someone trod on me as he staggered down the stairs, and two others followed, coughing and blindly stumbling over me. Choking on smoke and desperate to escape, they cared nothing for me or the boy sprawled on the steps. My eyes streamed so that I could not see, and the air was becoming too hot to breathe. I shook Purr.
"Help me!"
he gasped hoarsely.
"Bee,"
I groaned. If she was up above us, she was likely dead. I wanted to surge to my feet and try to run up those stairs to her. Was she trapped in a cell as smoke choked and flames roared? Dead already? I wanted to die trying to reach her. If I left him, Purr would die. I seized his arm and crawled backward down the steps, bumping him along behind me. It took more strength than it should have. As the smoke lessened, I saw that Purr had a tight grip on someone else. A child, a young wight by his garb, that Purr dragged with us. I gasped in a breath. The smoke in my lungs choked me and fought to be released. A shape reared out of the haze and seized Purr's other arm. Lant.
"Down!"
he gasped. Together we thudded Purr and the unconscious child down the remaining steps. When we reached the ground floor, I tumbled onto the floor beside them, barking out smoke. I rolled over onto my back and wiped my sleeve across my eyes. The smoke was not gone. It crawled along the high ceiling of this corridor as a thin grey mist. Lant knelt beside me. He would wheeze in a breath and then choke it out. Two other people clattered and staggered down the stairs. A woman exclaimed at the sight of us. The man, leaning on her, said,
"We must get out!"
They left us, hacking and gasping as they ran. Purr and the child were tangled on the floor between Lant and me.
"You idiot!"
I wheezed at Purr and then choked.
"Move! Crawl! We have to get back to the others and then get out of here!"
Purr coughed, opened his eyes, and then closed them again. When he didn't respond, Lant and I staggered to our feet. We dragged them laboriously away from the stairs. When the sound and stink of the fire on the upper stories faded behind us, we halted. Lant and I both sat down, panting cleaner air into our lungs. The top floors would all be ablaze now. Would the strong house collapse on top of us?
"We have to get back to the others,"
I said dully. Our quest to save B was over. We had to get out. I staggered upright again and stooped to seize the front of Purr's shirt.
"Get up,"
I ordered him. Purr coughed and tried to stand up.
"Bee,"
he gasped.
"Gone."
I spoke the horrid truth.
"We can't get up there. I doubt she's still alive."
My eyes were already stinging and running from the smoke. True tears mingled. It seemed an impossible cruelty that I'd come so close to her and then failed.
"Bee!"
Purr cried out and rolled free of my grip. It unbalanced me and I fell. I had never known that smoke could so disable a man. I crouched on my hands and knees, wheezing. Purr tugged at the unconscious child he'd dragged down with us.
"Bee, I've come to save you."
he said faintly. Then his words shattered into coughing. The child's clothes were scorched and smudged with soot, and his face disfigured by scars. The flesh around his closed eyes was thickened like that of a veteran brawler. There was a scar on his left brow and a split from a more recent beating at the corner of his mouth. The marks spoke of a short life best left behind. Then the boy opened his eyes, and B looked at me. We stared at each other. Her mouth formed a word that her breath could not push.
Da?
So small, so scarred. She lifted her hands toward me, and life surged through me again.
Oh, B,
I said, and had no more words. I reached for her and pulled her to me. Her arms went tight around my neck, and I held her close. I will never leave you again, I promised her, and her grip on me tightened. I rose onto my knees, B still clasped to me. Purr staggered upright. He was weeping.
We found her. We saved her, he said.
You did, I told him. With my free hand, I seized Purr's upper arm. Lant, come on. I stood and made a staggering run, dragging poor stumbling Purr and jouncing B's face against my collarbone. Lant caught up and took Purr's other arm. Jogging along, bumping into one another, we fled the smoke down the long, gently curving corridor until suddenly my head spun and I crashed to my knees. I managed not to drop B, but Purr fell beside me and Lant went to one knee.
Oh, B,
I managed to say. I lowered her to the floor. She was gasping spasmodically, as if she had nearly drowned. Her eyes had closed again, but she lived. She lived. I touched her face as Purr scrabbled over to us.
B, please, he said.
He looked up at me, and as if he were a very young child, he pleaded,
Make her be alive. Heal her.
She's alive, Lant assured him. He leaned on the wall to stand. Then he stood over us, his sword in his hand again. He'd protect us. She stared up at me, wordlessly. I shook my head, too heart-stricken to find even a word for her. My finger traced the line of Molly's jaw, touched her mother's mouth. She coughed, and I drew my hand back. No, this was not the little girl I had come to rescue. This scarred and beaten creature was no longer my bee. I did not know who she was. Still small for her years, as young as I had been when I had begun to act on all Shade had taught me. B. Farseer. Who was she now? She rolled her head to look at Purr, her breath wheezing in and out.
You came, the crow said.
Her words trailed away.
We came to find you,
Purr assured her, and went off into another coughing fit. He reached over and took her hand in his.
B, you're safe now. We have you.
None of us is safe, Purr. We have to get out of here. No time for reunions and apologies. No time for tender words. I lifted my eyes. I looked up at the paneled ceiling above us and the massive beams that supported it. Wood would burn, but stone did not. Fires always climbed. We might be safe on this level, at least until the heavy timbers that supported the stone scorched and flamed. Where were we? Had we passed the door and the stairs to the lower levels? We had to find them. Perhaps they'd found the tunnel. If not, we had to fight our way out before the whole stronghouse came down on us. I coughed again and rubbed my cuff over my streaming eyes. Time to move. We have to go, I told Purr. Can you walk?
Of course I can.
He staggered to his feet, then bent over, hands on his knees, to cough for a long time. I watched him, and slowly it came to me that I knew where to go. I knew where to get help. I had that moment of utter relief one has when the obvious solution to a problem becomes clear. It seemed ridiculous that I had not thought of it before. I came to one knee and lifted B carefully. She did not weigh much. Through the loose garments she wore, I could feel her ribs and the knobs of her spine. I stood.
I began to walk, and Purr straightened and staggered along at my side. Lant sheathed his sword. I glanced at him and saw that he, too, felt the same relief. I smiled to see that Purr held his knife out and ready. I knew we would not need it.
"My brother, where are we going?"
More welcome than cool air or fresh water was the touch of night eyes on my mind. I felt my spirits lift, and suddenly I knew now that everything would be fine.
"Where have you been?" I cried out to him. "Why did you abandon me?" "I was with the cub. She needed me far more than you did. But once she learned to raise her walls, I could not escape them. My brother, where are we going now? Why are you not running? Where is the scentless one?" "I know a place of safety. I know people who will help us." I saw them, revealed by the gentle curve of the corridor. A troop of 12 guards, weapons drawn, was coming toward us. Spark and Prilcop were with them, guarded on all sides. The fool hung limp between two guards. Leading the way was a small, stout man with a toadish face and bloodshot eyes. A tall, old woman hobbled along behind him, clasping her side, and two men, one garbed in green and one in yellow, walked beside her. I smiled to see them, and the small man's face broke into a grin. He motioned the guards to halt, and they did. They awaited us.
"Vindalaya, I am astonished," the old woman said. "You are truly a wonder."
"You should never have doubted me," he replied. "My brother, this is wrong. This joy you feel is false."
"I am so sorry," the woman apologized to their leader. "From henceforth, you will be honored as you deserve."
The men nodded agreement to that, their faces wreathed in doting smiles.
"Fitz, what are we doing? They will kill us!"
Purr shouted. Bee lifted her head from my shoulder.
"Papa!"
she cried out in alarm. "Hush! It's going to be all right," I told her.
"All fine,"
Lant echoed me.
"No!" Purr shouted the word. "No, nothing is all right. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with everyone?"
"Papa, walls up, walls up!"
"My brother, they deceive you," I laughed.
They were being so foolish. "All is well. We are safe now," I told them, and carried Bee toward the welcoming party. Chapter 35 Confrontations.
I am Bee, and Bee is me. My mother knew this from the beginning. Sometimes, at the beginning of a dream, I see myself. I am a bee, gold and black, shining like sparks and charcoal. As I fly, my colors grow brighter and brighter, as does an ember when one blows on it. I am so bright, I illumine places that are dark, and in those places, I see the important dreams.
Dream Journal of Bee Farsia.
It felt like a dream, the simple sleeping kind, in which one dreams of what one wants most. First Purr and then Father were with me, dragging me away from smoke and flame. Purr spoke to me, and I heard the voice of my first and only true friend. "I've come to save you." The words I'd been longing to hear someone say ever since that wintry night at Withywoods. I could not breathe for smoke, and I could not see him, but I knew his voice. But then, magically, it was my father bending over me. He touched my face so softly. Then he picked me up, and he was carrying me. I was safe, safe in his arms. He would protect me. He would take me home. He carried me, and I knew his swinging stride from when he had perched me on his shoulder.